grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Fumble Buttons live on air. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 343 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming to you live this week from Austin, Texas. I am not on the road, but I will be next week. So we'll see if I'm live. We'll see if I'm pre-recorded. I may be doing a pre-record, but welcome to the show. Welcome to everything. I have to give a very, very special thank you to all you guys once again. And a huge, huge round of applause for all of you that have been listening for 343 episodes. Whenever we did episode 300, we actually did a count. And at that point, you could listen to, you could listen to Dudes and Beer for almost a month and a half and never hear the same audio. So it's even more now. It's going to be even more with Curious Realm once we get there. And again, a round of applause and a thank you to everybody who went and not only voted for us in the People's Choice Podcast Awards in the category of news and politics, but thank you to all the judges who awarded it to us. We actively beat out Politico's EU podcast, folks. That still just blows my mind, the fact that I beat out Politico for a podcasting award. But it's because of you guys. It's because of you guys that the show has taken the turn it has. It's because of you guys that we cover the topics that we do. It's because of you guys that we have the great community that we do on Facebook, that I once again had somebody tell me this last week how much they enjoyed being a part of the community and how much it meant to them over COVID, that they could go and have sane conversations with people that they disagree with. You know, people of different walks of life, stuff like that. The fact that they were part of a community that did not turn toxic amongst all the politics of the last year, amidst all the craziness of the last year globally. So thank you guys for that, because it really is the group that has driven the show to where it is now, that's driven the guest roster to where it is now. And it is the group where we get the news of the week. If you stop on by Facebook and check out the Curious Realm, formerly Dudes and Beer public group, you can check out everything that we post over here. Out of The Intercept revealed Facebook's secret blacklist of dangerous individuals and organizations. There's also a sweet, sweet video of a monkey snapping some beans. A monkey's a bean snapping machine, folks. Coming to you out of Breitbart, Breitbart cartel reporter dies in Mexico. Authorities believe he drowned. Out of Inceptive Mind, Spanish aquaware develops a machine that extracts drinking water from the air. Out of Plug Hits Live, our good guest and friend, Scott Ertz, is the owner of Plug Hits Live and the head over there. We're going to be having him on to talk about this, actually. Twitch was recently hacked with streamer payouts and source code was accessed. We used to actively stream on Twitch live every week. We never really got much of an audience there, so we decided to allocate our resources elsewhere. But, man, to know that the source code got out, that's crazy. That could lead to all kinds of backdoors and systems over there. So, stay tuned for that. We once again will be having Scott Ertz. I was chatting with him today about that. If you're listening, Scott, I'm coming for you, man. We're going to be talking about that. Tonight on the show, I'm so excited to have I've been following the Texas Hemp Reporter for a little while on social media, things like that. As anybody that's part of the group or part of the page knows, I'm a big proponent of CBD, big proponent of legalized marijuana, medicalized marijuana especially. There are so many conditions that it helps out and scientifically shown to help out. Our laws are absolutely archaic. And when I saw that the Texas Hemp Reporter was based here in Austin, it was like, wow, awesome. That's great. And they've been on my radar forever to have on the show. And this last week, I literally saw our guest today, Russell Dowden, post an episode of Texas Hemp Reporter with Cheech Marin. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Is he the host of Texas Hemp Reporter? And sure enough, he was. Like, I knew the guy already. So we will be joined here in just a few minutes by Russell Dowden, the host of the Texas Hemp Show, as well as the lead over at Texas Hemp Reporter, to talk about hemp laws, marijuana laws, hemp and marijuana. Same family of plants, but not really the same thing. CBD, all these things. What brought him into the world of hemp? Because Russell has been involved with the world of broadcast. He's been involved with the world of like media and publication for a long time. When I first met him was back in my InfoWars days. He was one of the producers, or the producer of Weird Magazine. He was the producer of Rock and Roll Magazine here in town, which I actively wrote for with my biz. I wrote a column there every month, with my Austin Hot Mods company, my guitar pedal modification company. So we'll be getting into the world of media, what it has done for the cause of hemp, what it is doing right now for the cause of hemp, and why it is that he decided to start this amazing Texas Hemp Reporter and Texas Hemp Show. While you are there checking that out, make sure to stop on by our sponsor, True Hemp Science, folks. True Hemp Science is the maker right here in Austin of some of the best darn CBD that you will ever have. Whole plant extract is what they use. Spigeric alchemical process. Every part of the plant is used. Seed, stem, root, leaf, bud, every part of it. When I was recommended CBD by my doctor a few years ago, probably about 3 years ago now, when I really started traveling for work all the time, and started taking anxiety meds, my doctor recommended me try CBD. She was like, I've heard from a lot of people that they're getting great results with it, with their anxiety. And that began my search. So I started going to dispensaries across the country. And anytime I was in a town with a dispensary, I'd go with a buddy, check the place out, get me some CBD and try it. By far, True Hemp Science, Christopher over there, the creator, is just an absolute literal alchemist. Like the product that he has is probably, it's like a warm hug for me in the morning. Stop on by, check it out. True Hemp Science is the website. The code that you want to use is DUDE7 to get 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. And folks, you will also get two edibles of 25 milligrams each for free. Stop on by. TrueHempScience.com is the website. DUDE7 is the code that you want to use. And of course, don't you ever forget about our main sponsor, Podcast Cadet. Hey, my cue didn't play. What the Shasta? Here we go. Nothing like live, everybody. Can't just be a show. It's got to be a production.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com.
That's right, folks. Oh, my sweet baby Jesus. Make sure to stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. Check it out. Sorry about the technical issue there, folks. There was apparently a huge hiccup going on with our stream on Facebook, because it wasn't even going live, which is hilarious to me because I pushed go live and it was like streaming and then it didn't go. So welcome to the show, Facebook. How are you doing? You just got booked in the face by Dudes and Beer. Welcome to the show. Our good friend, goodness, how have you been doing? Russell Dowden, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Chris, for having me a part of the show, man. It's a small world in the realm of production and podcasting in Austin, Texas, my friend. I had no idea what you were doing until you reached out and said, hey, is that you doing the Hymn Show?
Yeah, precisely. It's one of those, like, both of us were like, really? Wow. And it's hilarious because Austin is what, I mean, like, audio, video, podcasting in general, and even media in most towns is a very incestuous industry.
Yeah.
And by that, folks, I mean, like, you know people, and you know people because they've worked with people that you know. Things like that. That's how we met, you know. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, the fact that we were orbiting around each other with our shows and both mutually had no idea that the other was doing it.
No, that is so weird. I didn't know you were doing this and then you didn't know I was doing that, but we knew each other for years and here we are. This is our reunion here on your program tonight. So really cool, man. I didn't know you were following our podcast on the Texas Hemp Show or picking up. Have you ever gotten the magazine too? Or that's been around town for going on 2 years.
I have not been able, much like it was with like Rock and Roll magazine and Weird magazine and stuff, man. Like it wasn't that it wasn't out on newsstands. It's the fact that it got swooped up so fast. Whenever, like, I've gone to the places that typically carry it and every time I go, it's empty.
One of the things, Chris, I've done differently with this publication is like, this is 49-year-old Russell publishing instead of like Weird magazine, 34-year-old, 37-year-old publishing. Now I'm a full glossy magazine. We're in all the HEBs and Whole Foods in town. You can find us in the CBD stores. People pick us up around town in Planet K's and smoke shops. And so, one of the things we've done in recent years is, you know, pay a little extra to be in those HEBs and those Whole Foods because a lot of foot traffic is in there, so you can always find a magazine there. But you know, I've been doing the publishing thing for 19 years now here in Austin, and it's a lot of fun, and it's the only thing I know how to do, Chris.
Well, and that's just it. People like us, Russell, we just do what we love, and we can't not do it.
Yeah,
like I can't not do this show. even today, like, pardon my fumbly fingers, folks, I assure you, during my 6.5 hour long, sorry about that, we have
production,
a guest that just
you
tried to call in
phone.
Early.
Chris, you got to mute your phone when you go on air.
Oh, I know. I had the channel open. Well, what's funny is that our next guest is on via Skype, and the only way that I can, like, hot switch like that is to do one on my phone and the other over. And when I was testing it earlier, once again, I've been out operating since, like, 6:30, 6:45 this morning. So, like, I ran home, got my template ready here, and then contacted you and was like, meeting's open. Let's do this thing.
And I was like, well, I got to go get a few beers at the convenience store because I can't be on Dudes and Beer without a beer. So I went to the store and hey, this is fun, man. I'm really happy to hear that you're doing this podcast. You've got it going for 300 and some odd episodes. Folks, Chris used to write for Rockstar magazine when I was publishing Rockstar and I think Chris came into the InfoWars family as I was exiting or something like that. And then you came aboard and started writing for Rockstar magazine. I used to publish Rockstar and before that Weird magazine. And so I've been in the magazine business a long time here in town. But it's very cool to see you doing this and you're set up there is awesome, man. I'm a little envious of what I'm seeing here in your studio there. That's pretty cool stuff. We got to get together. I want you to come by my studio.
I can definitely hop over to your studio and help you spruce it up, buddy. It's quite literally one of my side hustles. I help people build home studios.
Come over. Yeah, Chris does a lot of audio production professionally. He used to do a column with Rockstar Magazine and show you how to tweak or modify your gear, get a really cool sound out of your guitar.
Yeah.
So Chris is a tinkerer for folks that know or don't know, but he likes to play with gear and I'm like that too. And then I have this background in media like he does in broadcasting. And so just very serendipitous that we crossed paths again here in 2021. And I'm not surprised at all that you've been doing this.
Well, and I'm not surprised at all that you went the way that you did with Texas Hemp Reporter, man, because literally, you've never not been on the forefront of things, or had your finger on the pulse. And what's great is the way that you are bringing such a fantastic message to this cause. Once again, I mean, like, marijuana legalization, hemp legalization is one of the many causes that we've gotten behind on this show. Because, CBD has literally changed my life. Things like that. And the fact that here in Texas, like, we are literally now ringed by legal states and a legal country.
Yes,
like,
that's right.
Mexico's legal with marijuana now. Like, Arkansas.
Arkansas
is more progressive than Texas, folks. All right.
We talk about that, Chris, all the time on the Texas Hemp Show, how Arkansas or Louisiana can beat Texas in anything. But it's true. We're surrounded completely by programs that have better programs than the Lone Star State, including Mexico south of us. One of my co-hosts, Jesse Williams of the Texas Cannabis Collective, always reminds me saying, you know, you can go west to El Paso, Russell, all the way to the Pacific Ocean and have a cannabis plant state. They are open all the way to the Pacific once you get out of El Paso. And we are surrounded by states with better programs and we try to have folks on. I've had Sid Miller on the Texas Hemp Show with our commissioner of the Texas Department of Agriculture. I had him on maybe podcast 34 or 35 somewhere there. Nice. You could find those archives out there on our previous shows. But you know, he said, I asked him about, you know, what did you think about the program we have in the Lone Star State? And he said, well, you know, with anything, you gotta, how do you eat an elephant, Russell? You take it one bite at a time, you know? And so we do have 1% cannabis in the Lone Star State right now. And
1%. Number one, better than what it used to be.
That is a victory for Texans, I guess, at 1%, Chris.
Well, and the thing, like, hey, at least 1% is some kind of medical benefit, not like an incredible amount of like pain relief benefit or anything like that. But there are still some medical. Even just smoking CBD flower, there are medicinal benefits for you.
Yeah. And I, it's real funny. You know, I ended up in this space in a weird way. Sorry, I guess I'm getting a ding from someone there. Apologize if that comes through.
That's all right.
When COVID hit, I was kind of trying to get into, I was, somebody approached me to sell seeds, Chris, to sell cannabis seeds hemp seeds from Colorado. And I was working on my sports magazine, Texas Sports Monthly. I was bringing Rockstar back with a Gary Clark Jr. cover in March of 2020. And, you know, when COVID hit, it really, it killed South by Southwest. It killed my magazine for the music industry. All sports were halted on March 12th of 2020. So my sports magazine was out of business. So I had absolutely nothing to work on except this new idea for this hemp magazine. The guys were trying to recruit me to sell seeds to farmers in Texas. I said, well, I'm not interested in selling seeds. I'm a magazine publisher. Who's going to publish a magazine about this new growing industry of hemp and cannabis in the Lone Star State? I'm more interested in that. And so that was kind of how Texas Hemp Reporter was birthed, out of the sheer fact that COVID had destroyed my other two businesses that I was publishing, those magazines. And then my mother caught cancer that year. My fiance has lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. There's some emotional attachment to the CBD and these products that help people. So
it is, you know, literally one of the best things in the world for lupus sufferers, man. It really, I know about almost literally a handful of lupus sufferers, and I do not know a single one of the four that it is not like easily by a third improve the quality of their life. So
it really does. And then, you know, just the things that it can do for cancer patients, even though it's not documented a whole lot well, it's very under the table what cannabis can do for that industry. But then also pain management, and there's just so many things. And so it just kind of that all, it just really happened really oddly for me. I just swung into this rather serendipitously early in the year. And I was on a show not too long ago where I explained that, you know, it's just interesting that I converted into this space, not really planning to, but just kind of out of necessity. And so what better way for this space to get a good, a publisher that knew what he was doing for 20 years in this space. So I think in a way it's really a benefit for the space, and I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this a long time, and so you know, not to pout myself on the back, but it's just that hey, at least, you know, someone that's been doing in this space for a while, Chris, is doing this, and it's really cool. We are really growing. We're in Houston. We're expanding to San Antonio and Dallas soon, and it's just a lot of fun being active in the growing cannabis space here in Texas.
Well, and once again, such an important message to be able to get out there. And granted, there have been, not that there have not been publications devoted to the plant in the past, granted more toward marijuana than hemp, but you know, High Times, things like that, and they've been around for years and years, but I don't quite think number one, they are not doing what you do. There's no quite about it. They're not doing what you do.
Well, because they got weed in their state.
Well,
for one, and also, in Colorado.
Also, I think that those are much more of like a lifestyle magazine.
Yeah.
Than what yours is. I wouldn't necessarily call Texas Hemp Reporter and the things that I've read like a lifestyle type magazine.
No, and I think you're probably right to some degree, but. But hey, I've taken pages out of Rockstar here this summer. I mean, we've added Tommy. You know, I've interviewed Tommy and Cheech three other times with Weird Magazine in the past. I had them in Rockstar for the tour they did in 2015 with Lonnie Jordan of War. That show was out at the Backyard. But I've had a rock and roll background. A paranormal background that ended up, you know, in the, I ended up there in the trenches at even InfoWars over there doing InfoWars magazine for Alex. So as a longtime Austin publisher of different types of things, I certainly have pulled a page or two to point it, you know, out of the publishing business. I pulled a page or two out of Rockstar or Weird, where I've added Cheech and Tommy. And I think adding Kaimani Marley, who's on the current cover, that was our first musician artist that we just had on recently. That's the one that is available in Whole Foods and smoke shops in Austin and Houston. You know, so having in a little lighthearted, you know, a little bit of pop culture, if you will, into it is a good thing. But we definitely cover a lot of great things with the state legislature's laws and medical achievements that are going on with regards to cannabis. And we've got some great attorneys and lobbyists that write for us. And so we've been very blessed that, the space itself, Chris, is small.
Yeah.
Even though we are one of the biggest states, the space for Texas is a small space if you're in this space. So a lot of us all know each other that are in this space and they gravitate towards one another to support each other. And that's what's really cool about Texas.
Well, and once again, I think that what's really cool about Texas Hemp Reporter is the fact that it's not like how to choose the right bong.
Right.
You know, which I think, unfortunately, it's not that I don't partake. I love partaking. I partake regularly. The running joke with Dudes and Beer is the day that it became legal in Texas, we would become Dudes and Pot. You know, we'd become Dudes and Reefer or something like that.
Well, Chris, that was what Weird Magazine was. Magazine, when I was doing Weird, you know, we published the Austin Paratimes from 02 to 03, and then we started Weird Magazine in 04. And you know, yeah, Weird Magazine was tattoo parlors and liquor stores and nightclubs and rock and roll. And that was Russell Dowd in publishing in his early mid 30s. You know, I'm going on 50 this year. And so you evolve as a publisher. I think, I published Texas Sports Monthly from, the last 6 years, 5 years, doing a sports, publication as well. Yeah. I still own Texas Sports Monthly. I have a radio show I do on 104.9 The Horn during football season with high school here in Austin. I do that. But, you know, you just evolve, I think, as you get older. So this is a lot of fun doing this. Yeah. We're in a space that is something that matters. This is important to Texans. It's important to our country. It's important to the economics and infrastructure, you know, what hemp can do in the United States and the Lone Star State. So it's a very exciting time.
Well, and you know what makes me sad inside, Russell, is the fact that, like, I love my state. Like, I've lived in other states. I lived in Louisiana. I've lived in Maine, both legal states. When I moved back here, I was so happy. I love my state. But there are so many things that are just bass-ackward, man, where it's like, what, the one thing that I love about my state is, despite any depressions or anything like that go on economically, like, we live in a microclimate of an economy here in Texas. Like, what affects the rest of the country doesn't necessarily impact us the way it does the rest of them.
Yeah.
Because we have our own micro economy within things. Like, we refine like almost 70% of the country's oil. You know, things like that.
That's true. And I've heard that the Texas economy was the eighth largest global economy in Texas.
Yes, it is.
And that's why there's so many people moving here. And
absolutely. We for a decade in Austin have been the best city in the country for freelancers. That is an actual like Forbes statistic, folks. Look it up. It's just amazing. But what numbs my brain when I try to think about it is, what financial sense does it make to not legalize? Like, just look at Colorado and their 1 year earnings, their first year of legalization. You know?
How many billion? How many billions in taxes?
Yeah.
We read a few weeks ago, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago on the show, we had a stat that came that the state of Arizona released that their taxes were $4 billion in cannabis taxes in the last 12 months.
Yep.
$4 billion. That's I mean, if that don't build or pay teachers well or build roads or create social programs for a state, I don't know what would. And a state, this is why I want to get Dan Patrick on the Texas Hemp Show. I'm looking to get more lawmakers on as we get closer to election season next year. Because, folks, you know, we just came out of the legislation session. And so next year we'll be able to vote in and out who these people are in the Texas legislature. So if you really care about cannabis, thank you very much. If you care about cannabis and you want to make a change and make your voice heard, do it with your vote. Make sure you're registered and make sure you find out where these candidates are with cannabis in 2022 when we all can vote them in or vote them out. So this is a very important step, and I think I will probably personally take a little more proactive step towards where we are with, you know, the legislature and who these candidates are, Chris. I think that's very important going into 2022. We need to get an expansion on better cannabis, better testing laws for our farmers. I mean, there's going to be a huge, the next step in our legislature will be a huge one in 2023.
Well,
but, you know, get active about this and let, you know, go out there and find out who these candidates are and vote those guys in that you want in that are going to let cannabis be legal.
That's right, man. And that is something that we have said on this show so many times, is that we often forget in this country that we live in a republic and that a democracy is just a form of voting, not a form of government. And that it is a representative republic, which means if you don't go out and tell your representative what you want, you're going to get what you get. Like, Chris, straight up, feel free to call their office and ask them straight up. Ask your comptroller. Why this isn't a thing?
Well, isn't it true, Chris, that the Republic of Texas was one of the few, if not the only state in the United States that was a republic unto itself?
That's right.
Prior to being a state of the colonies. And so that's why there is in the state constitution for the Republic of Texas having been a republic, it can secede. It's the only state that can officially secede in its own legal constitution
because it was a republic. Fly our flag at the same level as the U.S. flag.
There's a lot of things like that.
A lot of little things like that.
People wonder why Texas is such a force now with liberty and freedoms and things like that. And it comes from the history of the state and its forefathers and forming and believing in freedoms and things like that. So it's very it's just cool to be a part of this. Hopefully Texas will get cannabis in front of it and hemp and hopefully the United States will jump on hemp in a big way and become a leader in industrial hemp as well, because there's a lot of things we can do with industrial hemp.
Well, and that's just it. Like, people have forgotten why Hempstead is called Hempstead. It's not just a name. Like, they grew hemp for Sherwin Williams paint. That's all they did. Yeah. That's how the town made its money, was growing hemp. If you remember on bills, like, I'm 46, I'm just a few years younger than you, but I remember legal tender for all debts private and public. And legal tender actively means you were bartering and trading in hemp.
That's right.
Back in the day. Right. And our country was founded on this. If you were a farmer back in the 1700s, 1800s, you had to grow an acreage of hemp for the government. Like, that was a law.
Well, I'm pretty sure the government was growing hemp. I mean, the guys who signed the Constitution were growing this stuff. So, Look, I think, you know, I had Kamani Marley on the program the other day, Cheech Marin earlier this year, Tommy Chong. When you talk to these guys in this cannabis culture, and, you know, they're really shocked, Chris, to find that Texas is so far behind.
Yeah.
We lead the nation in so many other categories. It's rather embarrassing for me when I have to, you know, ask Cheech or Tommy or, yeah. or Marley, you know, what they think about cannabis in Texas. And, you know, it's kind of embarrassing because we're at 1% and
yeah.
But like Kamani Marley the other day said, you know, hey, man, Russell, it's coming. It's good. It's good thing. It's progress, man. You know, yeah. it's coming here to Texas. So this is a good thing. And so, you know, it's a good thing that we are where we are, but hopefully these things and these laws will start to get a little better here in the Lone Star State.
I can hear Chong in the back of my head right now, like, how can such a cool state be such a drag, man? Like,
well, you can hear these shows. I think Tommy was 35. Sid Miller was 34. Podcast 34. We're only at 57 podcasts in the last year. Cheech was 55 last week.
Yep, that was a great one.
Good show. He's really cool and good. And these guys have their own brands now.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
when I used to interview them, Chris, it was always about their comedy tour.
Yeah.
You know, a movie or something they were doing, mostly comedy when I would interview them in the space, you know, with Weird Magazine. And now I'm in this space with cannabis and hemp, and these guys have their own brands. You know, and so, yeah, there was Freeway Ricky Ross.
Oh,
there
on, man.
We had him
talk
on
about
the show.
A dream interview, dude. Wow.
He is cool.
We definitely got to talk more, brother.
Well, I know. Well, you and I can exchange a whole bunch of guests back and forth, yeah. like who's interviewing stuff. And Kevin Booth is an old Alex friend, a friend of Alex's, and he was in Public Access. I've known Kevin for years, did a great documentary film called American Drug War.
Oh, wow.
Where he interviewed Freeway Rick Ross and Tommy while both were in prison in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And that's a great interview with Kevin Booth there on the show. There, Kevin and Freeway Rick were on the same show. It's really cool to see where these guys are and mix the conversation up a little with some of the celebrities and then the legislatures and the lawmakers. And we have a lot of fun at the Texas Hemp Show mixing things up.
Well, and once again, what I love is the fact that it is such a serious show. I mean, now granted, y'all have fun, you laugh, things like that, but the topics are real.
Yeah.
It's not about like, oh yeah, so how'd you get last Tuesday, man?
Right.
And that's just it. It's when you're talking to lawmakers, what is on the horizon right now? Because we've got you for about another 20 minutes here. But what is on the horizon right now that you're hearing coming down the pipe from representatives, things like that?
Well, look, what I'm hearing is that a lot of the lawmakers that are coming into the next voting, things are going to jump up and things are going to be a little interesting because there's a whole lot of new candidates that are coming in. We really as Texans have to pay attention to if we want change in cannabis in this next session, we got to pay attention to who's on the ballot
yes.
this next year in 2022, because a lot of folks are coming out that were been there for a long time. New guys are coming in, new blood. I'm 49 years old, Chris, and there's guys that are, you know, in their late 20s, 30s, early 30s, mid 30s, early 40s coming in.
Yeah.
As lawmakers. And so I'm very empowered to know that those guys are, you know, the new generation of lawmakers that are going to be coming in. So I think it's what we're hearing from my friends like Jack Sfinkel at Normal and Heather Fazio, you know, Texas for Responsible Marijuana Policy. What we're hearing is that lawmakers that are coming in is going to be new changing of the guard in 2022. And so what we want to really do is pay attention to this and vote like Tommy said on the show, vote those guys out that don't want this stuff.
Literally the only power you have.
It's the only power we have. And, it's important to exercise that muscle, you know, in voting. I called my legislatures. Now, I wasn't all, you know, I was Mr. Conspiracy Theory for many years, you know. In fact, you should have me on with the second hour of this show, because I can go so, I can go hard in the paint on paranormal the next guest with you, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, now I'm finding myself a little more proactive in the political genre with regards to cannabis and hemp. And that's because my business is that, is in that space now. And but it's also, you know, we need this. It's time, Texas. It. We need to get this plant, you know, medicine. We just approved what little 1% we do have for our veterans recently, and chronic pain is still need to be. There's still some things that we got to do, but we mainly got to get that level of potency up, Chris. Yeah. That's what's the next thing that we're really looking to do in 2023 is get the potency of the medicine, the quality of the medicine.
That's right.
Up, you know, to a reasonable 7%, 5% medicine, not 1%.
Yeah, yeah. And what a lot of people really don't realize, Russell, is the absolute impact that it has on the illicit, not the public legal marijuana has on the criminal justice system and on the system, but what illegal marijuana has on the justice system. The impact on it is huge and vast. There's a reason why Houston decriminalized. There's a reason why, you know, Austin decriminalized. It's because that stuff just eats it. Like when you're talking about somebody getting busted for like a joint, like I got a joint, you may as well be walking down the street with like a beer, you know, like, yeah, I got a beer.
Well, you know,
you know.
You know, when I was young and growing up in South Austin, you'd take the car out on a Friday night, Chris, and then the cop might find you and your buddies smoking or drinking something in the park, park. And those cops were so cool back in the old days. They would bust our balls literally a little here. If you take that euphemism
empty that out on the sidewalk there and stomp all over it.
That's now right. They would empty the beers, pour out your bag and tell you to go home. You know, and then you'd come back the next morning, you get your car and you drive it back from the park, you know, and that was how it was back in, you know, the late 80s. But it is encouraging to see that they are decriminalizing in municipalities. Hopefully that will continue. That's a trend that we've been seeing. And hopefully the Lone Star State will just do that on a statewide level as well.
Well, and in addition to that, it's also the fact of, you know, when you're talking about illicit marijuana, things like that, you're looking at, you have no idea how it's been grown, what conditions it was grown in, what was used to grow it. You have no idea what they sprayed on it to keep bugs away or what government sprayed it to try to kill it. Whereas when you've got a regulated industry like you do in Colorado, California, everything else, like you got to go through government regulations in the state to be able to even obtain a license to grow or anything like that. And then the eyes that are on you when you're doing it are so intense, and you have to be able to like list the exact amount of THC. All that kind of stuff. So there really is, for those of you out there that think like there's no medical benefit, you know, there's no medical process to what's going on and all that. Yes, there is.
Yeah, there really is, Chris. And one of the things that we were speaking to last week on the show, Coleman Hemphill was my co-host last week from the Texas Hemp Industries Association. And one of the things that as we closed the program on podcast 56 is we talked about, hey, let's have an open conversation with our lawmakers like Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor, who keeps stonewalling legislation before it gets to the desk of the governor's desk. Let's talk to the lieutenant governor, ask him to come on and tell the public why he feels that stonewalling legislation and further advancement of cannabis is so important to him. It's important that we hear these things too, but you know, when you speak to law enforcement and you start talking about, let's give our law enforcement, Chris, better tools, man. Let's give them, let's decrim this so that they are not having to, these guys have a hard job to do. They have families to support and they have a lot bigger problems going on our border here in Texas and immigration.
A lot bigger problems going on your street.
Well, you know, Austin has had a huge surge in violent crime here in the last 18 months to 24 months. Our law enforcement officers do not need to be worrying about, you know, a small little bit of CBD or a small, whether it's marijuana or not. You know, these are, let's give our law enforcement better tools, better laws that they can move on to the, you know, real challenges that are affecting our state.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the problems that are affecting our community, like, because these things become endemic. When you're talking about illicit drugs being sold instead of authorized drugs, legal drugs down the road where you got to walk in, give them a ID and then walk out with something. Different things start happening in your neighborhood. Different stuff just starts happening. And I'm an imbiber. I smoke weed, but I'm here to tell you there is a vast difference.
Yeah.
Even in the community and the mindset between dealers of illicit drugs and illicit marijuana and the dudes at the dispensary.
Well, because I mean, like, the quality at the dispensary level is, you know, it's like incredible quality. You know, I probably, like you, grew up in the 90s and late 80s experimenting with a lot of different things.
Love rave scenes.
The thing is now that I'm 49, I don't smoke cannabis like I used to.
Sure.
And I just try CBD here and there. And I really eat the pills more than what I do anything. Sometimes you can smoke some of it just to kind of get that taste of it. But your taste changes as you get older. Yeah. But it doesn't mean, you know, we still can, you know, it's still good to practice to want to still have those freedoms here as a recreational state. And maybe Texas can get there one day. But that's something we're all hoping for. And I think it's still an important issue that we pay close attention to.
Yeah. And it's one that we really should pay close attention to, because once again, it's one that, looking at the track record of other states, Colorado, Arizona, everything else, it's definitely one that is fiscally responsible.
And the business, you know, look, the Lone Star State, Chris, is such a capitalistic oil, energy, cattle, agriculture,
one of
farming.
The best states in the union to come
you
start
know,
a business.
We are
man.
One of the wealthiest states in the union. If not, like I said, I don't know how many years ago. Hey. I mean, I stated earlier I heard that we were the eighth largest economy in the world.
Yep.
That was a few years ago. All I'm saying is, to my fellow Texans, is guys, if we had legal cannabis, you think the lottery is a good thing for our Texas roads and education incentives, with the Texas lottery, which has been around for nearly 30 years.
Yep.
Imagine what the tax benefits would be for, you know, taxing cannabis and legal recreational cannabis in the Lone Star State. We are so large here with so many people, you would think that alone would be a motivation for lawmakers. Lawmakers instead, Chris, would rather fund a future. That's where we're at. We're at the epicenter is that we are now at the point where, okay, are we going to make more money on enforcement or more money on legislation?
Yep.
And that's where this has risen to the peak. And I believe in the next 2 to 4 years here in Texas that we are going to see a decline in the legislature's view on criminalization and expanding on these cannabis laws, because I think we've reached an apex here, Chris, where we as a state, Texas is so law enforcement supportive and law enforcement friendly. Enforcement, prison systems have made billions and millions of dollars on, you know, just incarcerating cannabis patients, cannabis people, victims of marijuana. So, you know, when is the benefit of incarceration and, and this money machine that the lawmakers are so used to, when does that get downplayed to the taxation of legal recreational cannabis in the Lone Star State? When does this tide begin to turn? And I think that in the next 2 to 5 years, this tide, this apex that I'm thinking that I'm speaking about is going to change, and hopefully new lawmakers coming into the Capitol will start to feel that way as well.
Well, and that's just it. As you were saying, that the representatives themselves were saying, there is a whole new crop of legislators coming in.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've been saying for years and years, is that, you know, give it another 15 years or so. All the old guard will be out.
Yeah, 5 years, Chris.
You know, and
it's not going to be 15. We need this done in 4 or 5 years.
Oh, God,
and that oligarchy of Texas legislature, you know, I'm not saying we're not going to always have cattle and oil.
Sure.
And that is part
Texas
of our culture here.
Texas.
Yes. But I think our lawmakers. Our lawmakers need to capitalize on this whole this plant with hemp and the things you can do with hemp and industrial hemp. There's biofuels. There's all kinds of so many things you can do. Sid Miller told me the other, you know, when he was on in the summer, he said, I think you can build the whole house. I don't know if you can build the glass out of the windows, but he said, you know, you can pretty much build anything out of a house, Russell, you know, when it comes to cannabis. And if you looked at the price of lumber lately, Chris, the cost for lumber.
Pressed, you know, hemp don't look too bad.
Hey man, you can grow a cannabis plant. We just got an article in today. It was a cute article. This was called Jack and the Hemp Stalk by Ken Gibson. There was a plant in South Texas that was 26 feet tall.
Wow.
Male plant.
That is a tree.
Industrial hemp. These are not flower plants. These are industrial male plants. But 25, 26 feet tall plants growing in Harlingen, Texas. And we are just at the beginning of figuring out, you know, the things we can do with our industrial hemp class here in the Lone Star State. And I got to tell you that that's going to be a new article coming up in the new edition of the Texas Hemp Reporter, Jack and the Hemp Stalk. Look for that. You'll see 25-foot pictures of cannabis is planted 7 inches apart from each other. It's just incredible.
Wow. And that's just it. Like, if you're talking about renewable sources, if you're talking about, I mean, even the products that can be made, there's a sulfuric acid process that's involved with breaking wood pulp down to be able to make paper. You don't need that with hemp. You can make, Henry Ford's first car was made to run off hemp seed oil. Like, and the body was made out of hemp. It was made out of pressed hemp. Like, just about anything that we make out of petroleum can be made out of hemp. Plastics, coatings for wires, whatever.
You know, biofuels. I think there's so much
PCB
so much
boards.
Potential clothes, school supplies.
Yeah.
There's a ton of things that we can be, just about anything that can be made out of hemp. And when you talk about sustainability, this plant only took Six months.
Yeah.
4 months, 5 months to grow. Yeah. So you don't got to wait 25 years for some lumber to grow in Northern Oregon to build a home and buy your lumber at Home Depot. You can grow this in South Texas and get the same kind of wood, you know, or a comparable, assets for growing industrial hemp. And so it's just
somebody out there will fact check me, but I want to say that it's something close to like 10 years that it takes once you've mowed down an acreage of wood. It takes a minimum of 10 years for you to be able to grow those trees back to a point of being able to be harvested again.
Yeah.
However, hemp will grow year round unless it's freezing and mature in 6 months.
No, in some states you can grow three times 1 year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Texas is one of them.
Yeah, South Texas can grow three seasons of male industrial hemp plants a year. It's really, December, January, February is the only three months that we might get a winter in Harlingen or Brownsville or Edinburgh.
Yep.
And so, we can get definitely three crops of industrial hemp out of the Lone Star State if we try.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just, there are so many vast opportunities for this plant, for this industry in our state. Thank you, man. We've got to have you on more regularly to talk about this kind of stuff. Literally. I mean, one of my favorite things is having correspondents on my show that come on like bimonthly, stuff like that, to talk about these kind of topics, man, because once again, it's one that I have been behind. I mean, granted, I've recreationally enjoyed for years, but when it comes to CBD, when it comes to the medical benefits, when it comes to the benefits of hemp as an industrial product, if you ain't behind it, you're a fool. I'd love to say it. That's probably about as Christian a way as I could say it without calling somebody real names, you know.
Chris, you got a great program and a platform here. I listened to several of them the other day just because I'm such a fan of paranormal, you know. I do host the Texas Hemp Show, but I've hosted Weird Radio in the past, and I do still have the weirdshow.tv is one of my websites that I don't update often enough as I would like to, but I'm a very big proponent of the paranormal. In fact, I'm going to Vegas here in a few week and a half to go to meet the Blues Brothers, just because I want to meet Dan Aykroyd, because he's such a paranormal guy.
Oh my god,
I'm really looking forward to meeting Dan.
I'm pretty jelly, bro.
But you got some cool stuff going on, and I think that my background, you know, it's funny because I'm on a KLBJ from 6 to 7 on our podcast here, 6 to 7 a.m. right after Coast to Coast.
Yeah,
and you know, 20 years ago, I was, you know, doing paranormal radio, you know, 20 years ago, and it's so funny that now I have a hemp show that comes on right after George Norrie on KLBJ here in Austin. And it's not, and my show that follows Coast to Coast is not paranormal.
No, it's nowhere near
actually hemp. So it's, it's just a trip how things turn out. But I love the paranormal stuff you do over here. Thank you, man. And I would love to come on. I'm going to tune in to this next guest here and hear what you guys have to talk about there.
Most definitely.
I'm a big fan of that stuff, man.
Well, before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to tune in, where they can go to subscribe, where they can go to check out, where they can go to get the magazine locally. Can they order it online?
Yeah, you know what? That's something I'm doing this Christmas. Is we're starting.
Nice.
We just added the advertising tab next to the podcast tab up there on the left. Yep. So now I got to add the subscribe thing because that's something that we've been getting requests for. This fall or Christmas, you'll be able to just actually order it yourself. You'll be able to go in there and we're automating it kind of through our MailChimp aspect back into this with WordPress, so that you'll be able to actually do that. So,
wow.
But in the meantime, the magazine is totally free. And if you're in Austin, If you're in Austin, you can pick them up at Whole Foods, any CBD store, any HEB has them. We just added, I guess, about 200 locations in Houston. There's about 300 locations in Austin, Chris, that have the magazines. Now, we're expanding to 1,000 locations in the Lone Star State.
Wow.
We just added 250. We're adding 255 smoke shops in Dallas.
Holy crap.
And then we're adding another 200 to San Antonio.
Dude, that is almost double distribution, man.
Well, I went from 10,000. We're going to go to 25,000 on circulation. It is true. When I was younger, we used to say we would publish 20,000, but we'd really print like 15 or 12.
Sure.
But that's just what publishers did, young ones.
Yeah.
But I'm really doing this now. And it's so funny because at 49, I'm saying, hey, okay, we're going to really print. It's that important, guys. We need to have really education about hemp and cannabis in the Lone Star State. So we're really, and thank you to all of our advertisers that support us on the Texas Hemp Reporter magazine and the Texas Hemp Show, because all of this is supported by advertising, very similar to what your show is.
Yep.
And that's great that you've got a hemp sponsor as well. But, all of this is sponsored by stuff like by businesses, that's what makes it really go. And so, thank you. Just follow us out there, TX Hemp Reporter on Twitter. You can follow us online at TexasHempReporter.com. Give us a like and follow on YouTube. Look for us there. Just Texas Hemp Show, wherever you get podcasts. And if you're local you're probably not, and you're listening to this show, you're probably not up at 6 to 7 a.m. on KLBJ on Sundays because you had a hard Saturday night. But nonetheless, you can still hear the podcast out there. Just search Texas Hemp Show for your wherever podcasts are available and pick up a copy of the Texas Hemp Reporter here in Austin. It's a lot of fun to be with you, Chris, and just a good time to bring this kind of a publication to my hometown here in Austin, and we're enjoying it. And stay tuned, next month here in November will be Cheech Marin on the cover of the Texas Hemp Reporter.
Man, I can't wait to have you on again and again and again, Russell. It has been so great over the last week just chatting back and forth with you. We've definitely got to collaborate on some more stuff, man. I'll get with absolutely. You off air, and let's definitely arrange a time to get together at your studio and master plan the takeover of the universe.
Yes, you come out here and see me in Round Rock. I would absolutely love you to come check it out. And I'm going to keep now. And you've got a new listener to Dudes and Beer right here in Round Rock, because I'm excited about this program. You got a lot of cool stuff that you're doing, Chris.
Soon to be Curious Realm and be even cooler.
Well, thank you for having me, man. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you so much, Russell. Wow. What an amazing conversation with Russell Dowden. Our next guest is actively already on the line, Daniel Allen Jones, host of The Vortex and creator of The Vortex website. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Christopher. It's awesome to be here again. Can you hear me okay? Am I coming through all right?
Sure can. So
awesome. Well, yeah. Appreciate the introduction. It's awesome to be back, of course. And now that everyone's really high tripping off that first hour, I'm going to be talking about some really weird stuff.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding, actually. No, that's great. Russell had a great talk. I actually enjoyed. I was listening to the first part, and it's really awesome to see he's on the show. He's doing some good work. So that was great.
Absolutely, man. Much like you, he is out there doing the Lord's work, my friend, trying to actively wake people's minds up. And that is one of the things that I love about the Vortex. I followed you for quite a while on social media before I invited you to come on the show, like, I guess about a year ago now. And man, to follow you online and to see the things that you're doing, to see the stuff that you put out and the conversations that you were having with people, just amazing. I'm so glad to see that you have been going out to things like the Edinburgh UFO Festival. I know you're going to be going to the Bigfoot Conference, the Texas Bigfoot Conference this weekend, correct? Or next weekend? next week.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, it is the Texas Bigfoot Conference. It's an annual event. This is actually the 20th anniversary, and that's going to be held in Jefferson, Texas, which is actually it's been dubbed the Bigfoot capital of Texas. And yep. There are a number of sightings and reports in that area. It's a fairly highly concentrated region of activity. So it's the perfect place for it. It's a great event. I've been going for a number of years now, and it's a really great way for people who are interested in that type of mystery to get connected, to, you know, discuss that, those types of issues. And I think that it's something that we've needed a lot here recently. Just with the way things are going, it's hard for there to be a lot of events, but as things, conditions seem to continue, hopefully improving, we can have more gatherings, you know, and get together in person. That's always something I enjoy. And sort of, you know, to tide us over, we have great opportunities like what you're doing here with Dudes in Beer, this podcast, and others, and all the work that you're involved with that people can just listen to wherever they are. And so I'm appreciative of the work that you're doing. And thanks for, you know, checking out some of those things I like to share online, the posts and all of that. It's just a great way, I think, to share about what I think is, you know, valuable scientific information that otherwise people might not hear about. It might be overlooked, and it helps us understand more about our world and nature and the reality we're a part of. So that's all something I'm interested in. And of course, there are a lot of those scientific mysteries that catch my attention. So I do what I can to get around. And, you know, a lot of the different things, like you said earlier this year, I was at the Edinburgh UFO Festival and Conference. That was a great event. I've been going to that one for a while. We talk about these different issues, like the subject of UFOs or mysterious encounters and strange creatures and all these things, the paranormal and weird issues that I think some people might think sound kind of strange or something, but there are a lot of interesting aspects to this, whether you're a believer or not. And I think that it's important to use critical thinking and discernment either way. But, you know, there are a lot of interesting things that we can learn about this and how we function as people attempting to understand the world around us. So I just do a little that I can. And that's, like you said earlier, I have things I produce through the Vortex. And that's kind of what my channel is, that I make videos for.
Well, and the thing that I love about all of your content, I mean, look at that, George Norrie, Graham Hancock, like you're definitely out there mixing it up with some big wigs and some big names, talking about some fantastic topics. And much like you were just saying, that the whole point of this show is conversations that we should be having, but that most people would consider, like, why would you want to talk about that? Why?
Right.
for me, one of the big things that I say on this show regularly is, don't forget, folks, mankind's been around for like, 10,000 or so years, at least on record scientifically. And out of that, for less than 500 of them, we've been of a general consensus that the Earth is round. Until then, that was a conspiracy theory. You were cast out of your village. You were considered a witch and burned at the stake. You were excommunicated from a church if you said that the Earth was round or that the sun was the center of the solar system, not the Earth, or that there was even a celestial sphere. So it took open minds, open hearts, and open conversations for this consensus to be there. And for those of you who want to poo-poo that concept or that idea, I posit this. My son's room is right on the other side of that wall. There is no Pluto on his solar system map. No Pluto. Been there my whole life. But apparently a bunch of scientists came together and went, you know what's not a planet anymore? Pluto. And now that's science. My high school textbook that's sitting in my bookshelf behind me from astronomy is wrong. That textbook is wrong. That science is no longer valid. Science is not a static field. It is forever in flux. The day that you think that science is a law, or that it can't be broken, or that it is absolutely static the way it is, you are the person with the problem, not the person thinking outside the box.
Yeah, I very well said. I think that there are a lot of issues when it comes to our understanding of scientific concepts and the implementation of scientific thought that show, like you said, a lot of things are they're in flux and they change, and our viewpoints as a society fluctuate depending on who's doing the work to help us understand that and how we understand that through whatever channels, whether it's a show like this or it's on
yep.
the news or on, you know, something people can listen to or watch or go see in person. I think that that all can change in very major ways in a short amount of time. And one of the things I think is important to consider about these mysterious issues or topics is that the unexplained through the scientific lens can lend us the greatest opportunity sometimes for growth and development as a civilization. And you made a good point earlier, the idea about the world model and what we use to make sense of what we exist with in this world, right? Whether it's a flat plane in some people's minds or it's a celestial sphere, right? A round ball, whatever it is through our own interpretation of the world. And in some way, that's sort of a product of our conditioning and in society. We have certain pillars that we, you know, rest our mind within that give us the impression that we live in a sort of collective world of information and of matter and of emotion and of these things that we try to rationalize or understand. And then we have these other areas, which are sort of the gray areas. And sometimes we call those things different concepts throughout whatever culture it is. We might have the same understanding cross-culturally and use different terms for some of these things. But if you look at the spaces that encompass those mysteries, sometimes people would refer to that as the God of the gaps, where you have this idea that maybe the things that aren't explained are really just chalked up to, well, it's God. And, you know, not to negate that that's really a right or wrong answer or something. I think that what it does is it is a sort of placeholder for the lack of understanding of what's really going on, you know. And as we learn more about our world and ourselves, like you said, you know, being open to the possibility that our interpretation is always adapting and we have to adapt. Otherwise, you know, we'll stay stuck in this sort of paradigm of disillusionment. And that can be dangerous. And in some ways, some people can survive in that. But there's a lot that I think we will be understanding. We continue to do every day. It's just sometimes people don't hear about it. And that's the thing is that it's not necessarily the discovery that's important in science. It's also the declaration and how that declaration is made and how it reaches people, how it really does something to enact social change. That's really a big part of how science is more than just about understanding the world. How does that get out to the basic form of the population in a way that raises the standard of awareness? And I think that's an important part of why exploring the unexplained and mysterious phenomena can help lend the greatest insight into our development as a society. And that can also be stratifying.
Well, and, you know, one of the articles that I just popped up on screen as you were saying that, because as you were talking about the way that science marches forward with society, like scientists generate matter directly from light. That's from SciTech Daily. And I mean, fizz.org, all kinds of stuff. I posted it up on the Dudes and Beer group whenever it first happened, and it was confirmed. Typically, and sometimes in the group, you know, people will be like, hey, you posted this article already. And it's like, yes, but if you note, it's from another source. It may be topic, but it's from another source. And the reason I do that is to show you there's verification out there. It's not just one source saying it. It's this source and a source like from an opposing point of view is saying it. And whenever you see things from like fizz.org and stuff like that, where it's like scientists generate matter directly from light, physics phenomena predicted more than 80 years ago. Man, what do you think the inspiration of like replicator, make me a cup of coffee? Where do you think that idea came from? Probably that physics phenomenon predicted more than 80 years ago. I listen when I'm on the road, Daniel. One of my like decompressions at night is to listen to old radio dramas. I love them. Specifically old sci-fi radio dramas. And you want to get into some wild stuff, man. Like, there was one from like 1948 that was talking about basically quantum computing. They were talking about a computer that was made to make all the decisions for humanity because decisions just became way too complex. And this computer literally wrote data on atoms. On atomic shells, used atomic shells to store data. It's like, dude, these guys are talking about quantum computing in 1948.
It's really interesting to consider that conceptualization and where it is in today's stand, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. You know, when you see things like Captain Kirk is going up to space. Yeah, well, we are literally now three steps away from a replicator, Captain Kirk. Cool that you can go up into space if you got enough money, but don't forget, we're three steps away from a replicator, people. Like, that's right. Where we've come with science. And it's only because some people got together in a lab and said, what if? And that's the beautiful thing about science is that according to the scientific method, you're allowed to hypothesize anything you want. The imagination is the limit with a hypothesis. What you're supposed to do is use scientific experimentation to prove or disprove said hypothesis. And if it's proven, then it becomes theory. Then you got a theory. You got a working theory and, you know, more research, more peer-reviewed study will turn that eventually into a scientific law like gravity or the speed of light. You know, these things that so much is based around, but even that has become like broken. What we used to know to be, quote, Moore's Law, which was basically the way that computers grew, you know, how many transistors you could put in a square inch. And
it's a really interesting concept.
It's gone. It's obliterated. No longer exists. And that, like, 3-4 years ago when I heard one of the heads of Lockheed Martin up on my stage at the NVIDIA conference in D.C. talking about how within six months to a year, Moore's Law will collapse. That's where we're at with the state of transistor technology right now. And that's what Moore's Law basically states is, you know, every 6 months, the capacity of a chip in both speed and number speed due to the number of transistors able to be fit in a square inch increases. And yeah, we've gotten to a point that law, that maxim of science is just defunct now because of scientific development.
And I'm really glad you brought this up because you can see that this is something that, as you said, you got to really hear it firsthand. Yeah. And I think that what you see happening is the concept behind Moore's Law is essentially something that can be extrapolated in a different form, but refers to the capacity of the transistors and how the processing power can be exponentially greater or scaled, you know, depending on what the technology consists of and the materials. So if you use the same principle, you can say, and this is something that you've probably heard this as well for some of the audience who hasn't, you know, Elon Musk has even brought this out of the proposition for simulation theory. He says, if we consider Moore's Law in accordance with what we see in augmented reality, or to put it simply, video games, then if we see how on a trajectory of the next, you know, several years, maybe not even within the whole century, that it would be to consider something futuristic as far as a virtual reality would be essentially, as he says, indistinguishable from base reality, which is like the organic supposed, you know, normal form of our world or universe. And so that's a really incredible concept to consider, even someone like him saying something like that. Most people don't know what Moore's Law is, but you know, there's something I had that I think is important to mention. This is a really interesting quote. It's Planck's principle.
Yeah.
Max Planck is, you know, renowned for really bringing out the whole idea of quantum theory and mechanics and these things. But the quote, and there are many, of course, but this one particularly fits really well with this conversation. He says, "A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it. And an important scientific innovation rarely makes its way by gradually winning over and converting its opponents. It rarely happens that Saul becomes Paul." And it says,
yep,
what does happen is that its opponents gradually die out and that the growing generation is familiarized with the ideas from the beginning. Another instance of the fact that the funeral lies with the youth. And this is informally paraphrased as science progresses one funeral at a time. And this, yep, is something that I think, absolutely, is a big part of like how we understand things culturally, whether it's, you know, built upon earlier predecessor information or not. And you can see, like, apparently since ancient times, we've lost a great deal of our understanding somewhere along the way.
Numerous times.
From, like, Graham Hancock, he's a big proponent of that, saying that, you know, we're humans are a species with amnesia and that, yeah, we've forgotten a great deal about our past that seems to be of like some significance. And I think that's important to consider, you know, even if in the event that we do have a great, revealing answer to a lot of these strange, mysterious subjects, whether it's UFOs, you know, non-human intelligences or advanced life forms, other things, spectrology, spiritual concepts, these ideas of entities, non-corporeal, you know, non-physical or immaterial forms of life or some kind of consciousness. I think that all of these concepts have been very well, like, studied and investigated and on official capacities and in some more or less official, but whatever real credible, you know, work that's been done on this. And I think that you hit a good point earlier also is the credible resources that we can see are also just a sort of a product of our own barrier, you know, passing of these ideas that,
yep,
you have to be of a certain credentialed, you know, position to give factual information. And a lot of times I think that's really important to consider rather than some, you know, not so reputable source that's spewing out things that otherwise can't be substantiated or just really incredible claims. And that's kind of what the Sagan standard is alluding to, is extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And sometimes that's not always available, even in cases where there are anomalous experiences, and in the sense that people want something like hard evidence, something that could win in a court of law. I think that there are some pretty substantial things, but it's difficult to see what we need to do to sort of pass this idea of a threshold in society that, you know, certain concepts are still very taboo, like the existence of UFOs. The phenomenon itself shouldn't be up for debate. It's simply referring to an unknown object.
Yeah.
You know, we're not necessarily saying alien spaceships, but it doesn't mean that it's not. It just isn't necessarily, you know, that every UFO is an alien spaceship. And I think that that's just the pop culture baggage we see with a lot of these types of ideas.
It sadly is, and that's just it. That's why whenever we have people like Mike Turber, Jack Sarfati, things like that on the show, we make the point to explain, like, UFO means just that. Nothing more. Means it was an object that was flying through the sky that you have no idea what it was. Doesn't mean that it came from an alien. Even the UAPs that we see right now, Tic Tac, Go Fast, Gimbal, all that kind of stuff, does not mean that it came from an extraterrestrial source. At least not the craft you're looking at. Perhaps the technology was reverse engineered? What have you? Nobody's doubting that. absolutely sound hypothesis. But to say that those are absolutely alien craft, I think that's jumping the shark a little bit, especially when you're talking about a year and a half, 2 years ago, the U.S. Navy released a patent that literally shoots an infrared laser out as chaff that is the size of an aircraft.
Right.
It can move whatever speed they want that's made to fool infrared cameras that are on the front of missiles. Oddly enough, there's not a normal video that we've seen of any of these craft. They're all infrared. So who's to say that's not just the weapon system being tested? Like,
right.
They could make that object move at 10,000 miles an hour if they want. It's a hologram. So, and that's the thing, is that there's so much news that comes out so fast, Daniel, unless you're a news hound and you've got like an RSS reader on your phone like me and you're checking the news cycle every 15 minutes because that's your jam, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss it. And if you could scan, doesn't matter what color TV you watch, you could watch red, you could watch blue, you could watch purple. Guaranteed your evening news at night is going to be covering the same 10 topics. Doesn't really matter what paradigm of TV you watch. Those are the hot stories. Those are the takes. We're going to be giving our take on it tonight at 11. That's how the media works. And even when you're talking about, it's interesting because right now with the Facebook whistleblower that just came out, man, I watched that testimony the other day, Daniel, and it was one of those that was like such a breath of fresh air to hear somebody say, because yeah, we live in a dopamine fix. We literally do. It's dopamine and cortisol, man. And it's whether you're getting something pleasurable out of your viewing experience or whether you are stressed out by your viewing experience, which to the brain is just as valuable either way. Cortisol or dopamine, doesn't matter. Stress hormone or happy hormone, your brain's going to be hooked to the hormone.
Right.
And to know that news cycles take advantage of that, that even science takes advantage of that, that even they are myopic enough to dismiss other researchers, to say, and even to shun other researchers to the point of them being discredited, it just blows my mind. Even now, knowing that one of the people I've been looking to get on the show, especially once we change to Curious Realm, is the Texas Bigfoot Conservatory, because they're one of the groups that holds, unfortunately and sadly, science will only accept a corpse when it comes to a Sasquatch. That's the only thing that they're going to accept as evidence. They're not going to accept castings. They're not going to accept hair. They're not going to accept anomalous DNA. The only thing that they will accept is a corpse on a table. So we're going to go out and hunt them. And
yeah, and
that's frighteningly sad and true.
That or maybe a live specimen.
Well, one of the two, but it's frighteningly sad and true. That's the case. And whenever you're talking about the article that I kept popping up a while ago was from Yahoo News, Jane Goodall on whether chimpanzees should get passports, why elephants should be in zoos, and how Bigfoot might be real. Like, that's Jane Goodall. There is almost literally nobody who has done more primate research in the world than Jane Goodall. Yeah. You know, and when she's coming out and going, you know, as a naturalist and a scientist, I really don't discount it.
Yeah, I think you can see that when you have people of a reputable stature within that zoological or scientific community, it can say a lot. And then some people can say, oh, you know, she's, you know, this or that. And I think that it is interesting how even within that whole amorphous realm of science, that there are different and sometimes contending theories or viewpoints, sometimes for money, for grants. If they can do, if this establishment or institution can be able to do their study versus, you know, another group or something.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult set of barriers to really make sense of any, you know, established thought or working theory. And I think that's another interesting thing that you mentioned earlier. This is an idea that I think, you know, many people have speculated all kinds of different things about some of these issues when it comes to non-human life, whether it's some kind of form of creature or series of creatures here on our planet that we're unaware of as a whole, or somewhere else out there in the rest of the universe. People have all these ideas, and I think that's great. But at the same time, some people, they you know, throw the term theory around quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to consider how, you know, we can see sometimes it's okay to theorize certain things, but really I think that the main idea of the theory is it has to be something testable, or hypothesized.
That's right.
You can see that, you know, if people are making claims about certain alien beings are the ones behind this or that, it's like, well, that sounds incredible, but is there something tangible enough about any of that that it could potentially be tested at any point? And that's a really tough question that really I think is also a sobering one, because there are a lot of lofty ideas and a lot of rhetoric when it comes to some of these subjects or about Bigfoot or something. I saw that article of Jane Goodall commenting on how, you know, she is not dismissive of it and that, you know, it's open to the possibility. I think that says a lot itself.
Foolish scientist would be dismissive.
Yeah. Yeah, you have a lot of people who are coming forward within that community and other communities who do bring some credence to otherwise strange issues like this.
Well, and, you know, even in the Dudes and Beer group, and on occasion, Daniel, you know, I tag you in posts because it's one of those like, yo, man, check this out. And one of those here recently was the new skeleton of humans found in China. That's like a whole new branch of humanity, things like that. Like this stuff is being discovered all the time. There were like 27 species that went extinct this last year. There were over 100 discovered.
Yeah.
We see the headlines all the time about 27 species extinct. We don't see the ones about how many were discovered.
Yeah. And that's another thing is that we do find and make new discoveries every day. And most of those aren't, let's just say, exotic enough to really get the attention of non-scientific people, like the everyday, you know, person, the common people who don't really have a way to keep up with some of this unless they either go out of their way or they hear about it from some other mainstream source or something. Many of those discoveries just kind of get swept under the rug, but are only interesting to people who care enough about any of that stuff to keep up. You know, like, you do a great job of sharing a lot of that, and I'm very appreciative when you tag me, because that's how I find out about some of those cool things too. Welcome, but like you said, this one skull found in China, is this one of these articles, you know, says it's forcing scientists to rewrite the story of human evolution. Well,
darn tootin'.
You know, I think that there are some like sensationalized claims for the purposes of writing articles. Like you pointed out earlier, sometimes that can be taken advantage of, but you do have some interesting findings, which, you know, not to put a crazy spin on it, you do have to factor in, where's this really fit within what our conventional understanding is, or do we need to rework it? Or, you know, does it seem to be one of the things that, you know, this is something that you find happens sometimes, is that findings like this sometimes seem unique, but may not always be original, and also might just imply that new people are finding known things and are looking to also just sort of make a name for themselves or for some kind of idea or group or something, you know. And I think that can also be very tricky to deal with as well, because there are some people who've claimed this whole idea of the Dragon Man skull is nothing more than sort of the idea of maybe like the Denisovans branching off into another area or something to that effect.
Sure,
and
sure.
That might be possible, but at the same time, you know, we have to be careful on overlooking discoveries like this and then unfortunately like filtering them out because they don't necessarily fit in. And I think that's something you see happening all the time. You made a good point. We see a lot of things that don't get acknowledged, and findings like this one actually did hit mainstream news outlets in some places. And I mean, this is something that was found many, many years ago, but it really just came back into awareness, just a few.
Yeah, the guy like, hid it in the bottom of a well for 80 years.
Yeah.
He knew about this thing for 80 years and was like, yo, man, that's just creepy, and I'm afraid the government's going to come to my house and, like, take my family and stuff like that. And he threw it at the bottom of the well and told his family. It was literally a deathbed confession that was like, hey, man, you may want to go check the well on the south side of the property because there's some wild stuff in there that you may want to check out. Literally how it went down. And it's like, wow, we're talking a skull. This article released, this news announcement came like right after I had L.A. Marzulli on last time, like within a week, not even joking. And I sent him a copy of it. I was like, hey, man, seen this new human skull with like twice the volume size? You want to talk about giants? And yeah, the skeleton and everything else shows that it would be almost 9 feet tall. Like huge. Like that's just a large departure from typical humanity, from Cro-Magnon, anything like that. So
and I think that one of the things that people have sort of misconception of is the way that the scientific process anyway, or progression of evolution works within hominids. And it's not like every person on the planet just somehow like evolves and changes into a new type of species or something. It's these groups of pocketed individuals who undergo micro transformations in their genetic makeup, which then become macro changes within their pocketed communities. And you see this within animals. You see it within these cultural, you know, disparate groups around the world that are all connected in different ways, I think, but also, you know, share genetics with the Denisovans, with Neanderthals, and with maybe even earlier, like we, you know, just found out some, not too long ago, this whole idea of like, missing genetic lineages and how we're discovering new people who we don't have any tangible physical anthropological remains to examine, but we have forensic information we can examine through genetic information. And that's a really interesting concept that, like you were kind of alluding to earlier, certain things that we haven't had access to understand up until just very recently in the scope of human history. And I think that that shows that if you continue, hopefully we can, and this could all change, of course, at any given time. But if we hope to continue along the same trajectory, that I would propose that in less than a century, we'll be able to fully map out like most of the tree of life, you know, the genetic breadth of everything, you know, we can examine in a way that we have the technology to do so. And it would almost seem like the way you described earlier, early science fiction shows portraying ideas that now almost seem commonplace. Practical at this point in our stage of development. I think that if we continue along that, I would propose that that's a possibility that we would have the ability through whatever organic or synthetic means to examine something and determine its chemical composition, genetic makeup, really see into that through a way that we haven't conceived of before. And that's an incredible possibility, I think, that will lend us a lot of opportunity to understand like where things have really been going the last 100,000 years, if not, I mean, for at least for people, because we just found out this discovery recently that predates like the Clovis people here in America.
Yeah,
apparently.
Oh, God, man, get out of my head. You're that's creepy. I literally just brought up oldest human footprints in North America found in New Mexico, which, came out like a month ago. We're talking like 20,000 years, 20,000 years. And they have been saying, at least I know my whole life, that people did not come to North America till almost 10,000 years ago via land bridge. All that kind of stuff. Possibly the end of the like at the beginning of the last end of the last ice age, things like that. And to see that, that's AP News, folks. And that's not the only source talking about U.S. Geological Survey recently analyzed seeds stuck in the footprints to determine their approximate age, ranging from 22,800 to 21,130 years ago. That is literally twice. The given calendar of humanity in North America.
Yeah. You know, it's incredible to consider that it really overthrows those pillars that have been steeped in our conventional outlook on this for so long. That really kind of shakes that in a way that you have to consider if this really does play into our understanding of what history is. And not what we can just interpret from it. And that's a challenge. It's also something that is a bit of a play on our ability to interpret information. And if we happen to misinterpret things as well, I think that this is more eye-opening because, like you said, for the longest time, the main idea is that people haven't really been here. And if we find things that overthrow that, in times past, it might have just been overlooked and filtered out and then people could have eventually, and you hear stories of this, there are works done by people who have, considered that people of modern anatomical structure have been here in the Americas, both North and South America, for a very long time. And the concept of advanced construction methods at sites like Tiwanaku, Bumapunku, all of these different places that have extraordinarily curious methods to their construction, to me, I think are indicative that there's been something happening that we just totally like lost track of. And that's bizarre to think that we declined rather than to progress in a way that conventional history tells us we started as, nation states and we go from there and then, continue on into this idea of collective forms of government and all of this. But then you look back at these ancient sites and you're like, no, these people had something else entirely going on that we are trying to like piece together like a puzzle. And we see things here and there that some we can kind of do now and others we were fumbling to even replicate today. And that should be eye opening for everybody. That something incredible has been going on here in this place that we call the Earth. And some people might think that the statement you said earlier that was in the article about the dating is balderdash. You know, I know people, they're like hardcore creationists. They say the Earth is only, 4,000 to 6,000 years old and that's impossible. And they're dead set on anything like this is an act of something that's, been alluded to in the Bible or other biblical literature that shows that, their way of justifying how this works. And I think that it's important to see that there are many contending and citing viewpoints and all of these things. And people can reason with discoveries like this in a way that makes sense to them, but it might not actually be what really happened. And that's a strange thought because consider, like you said, how let's just say for the sake of conversation, how wrong we've been and times past about simple things in our world.
And proven wrong time and time and time again. Daniel, it's not just a one-off thing, that the consensus of humanity has been proven like, well, that wasn't right. I mean, heck, at one point it was pretty globally okay to have slaves. Not all right. not cool. And that's just it. Humanity marches on, science marches on, despite everything else. We move forward, but the question is, does the conversation move forward with us? Because, like you were saying, you know people that are hardcore. I definitely know people that are hardcore like that. I was a seminary student my first year in college up in Dallas. I definitely know some hardcore creationists from the Bible Belt up there. And one of the things that we talk about on this show regularly is the religion of science. And how modern science has fully become religionized. In the fact of it is infallible. It cannot be changed. I mean, these are the same things I hear from, you know, staunch Catholics, things like that. Nothing to you guys. I love you. You know, you're friends of mine. I almost wore your collar. However, that dude in the second part of the Bible, I'd love you to go find in the big red words anywhere where he said any of that stuff. Other dudes after him said it, dudes before him said it, but he didn't. So, and that's just it. We become so engrossed with this being part of our identity. I mean, I know people that straight up are like, screw what those scientists say. Pluto's a planet. It'll always be a planet to me. It's like, but it can't be. Science said it's not. So how can it be by science? And that. It's interesting because when you start looking at things, like you said, in the history of humanity, in the scope of humanity, there is so much that has been lost. Prime example, we a few times have had Stephen Myers on the show talking about the possible construction of the pyramids. And I love my shows on Gaia Network. I love all kinds of guests. Do I think that the pyramids were constructed by people from outside of our Earth? No, not really. Actually, I think Stephen Meyer's concept of building the pyramids via water lock system is pretty revolutionary and probably pretty close to the way it was done, if you think about it just logically and engineering wise. And what's interesting is that even to this date, when we have tried scientifically, and there are numerous documentaries out there by National Geographic, about every decade you see a new one where a group of scientists has gotten together and they're going to replicate the building of the pyramid on a 1/10 scale and a 1/10 amount of time. And they can't do it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how
they still can't do it.
Things don't really pan out. And I think that should tell us something, you know? Yeah. It's great that you mentioned these things because it leans into an area that I'm really particularly interested in. When we're dealing with these ideas in relation to human history and culture and different people around the world, all of their things from the histories that they understand, their mythologies, their understanding of the world and phenomena around them and that they are a part of. These things are an anthropological issue as well. And I think that as interested as I am in studying like the phenomena surrounding the issue, to understand the people and the culture of people involved with these things has always fascinated me as well. And so I've been working on this ethnography where basically, you know, you can get an idea about all these people that, and you mentioned some of them earlier. And I think it's, you know, we talked about this idea of like creationism or creationist. Sure. I should just say that I'm not necessarily just trying to call them out specifically, but that I enjoy talking with people of all viewpoints or extremities or whatever you have, you know. So
that's why you're on this show, Daniel.
because you get an idea about the way that people view or interpret the world based off of what their, you know, understanding is, or their upbringing, heritage, their culture, all these things, yeah. right? And to the extent that this also sort of comes full circle into something you'd mentioned earlier, if in the event that we're able to eventually get to the point, someone out there, I don't think it would be like widely accessible but for a long time, but if someone out there could understand how to view or be able to access the information of the atomic structures of genes or just genetic information in a way that they can say, oh, okay, here's what's going on with this and this is how far back it goes and all this, surely they'd be able to understand if in the event that some form of like advanced life came here that was non-human, aliens or otherwise, whatever it is, who helped out or not. I think that in, and especially for those who consider the whole idea of like, the genetic alteration of humanity through these advanced intelligences, some people, you know, fall into that like ancient alien, theorist circle, I guess. For anyone mm-hmm. like that, I think that if in the event that that were actually having had happened or is happening currently, that we would, if at some point able to, you know, be able to access genetic information, we'd probably see signatures of modification and alteration, just as we're doing now, with
sure
all of those things, vitro fertilization, all of it. I think that's an interesting concept that is sort of new to us, is that what can we glean from understanding genetic information through an optimum degree of technical proficiency, meaning we're not having like errors because of technology. We have a very clear sense of what's going on based upon like accuracy and precision, and might be able to see, oh, there's the trademark symbol the aliens left right there on the chromosomes. You know, like that was such sure. a thing. We would be able to determine that, I would like to hope.
Well,
and
I
in
mean,
doing so,
yeah.
it's kind of funny to think, but like you said earlier, you know, a centralized form of consciousness controlling and making decisions mm-hmm. for humanity, that's transhumanism, that's the singularity, yeah. you know, and yeah. in effect, like if we had something like that, I think that the ancient people had some form of awareness collectively of the reality or medium we exist within, having something to do with non-physical energy. And I know energy yeah. is a very lofty term. What I mean by that specifically is like measurable consistency through frequency and vibration mm-hmm. and or vibratory fields, which, you know, if you consider the building materials and construction methods is one thing. The materials used in these ancient monuments is also peculiar because you have things that would also be seen in microchips and transistors yep. and conductors. And so I think that, and this isn't necessarily, I would say, is like my original idea, but I think that through the research done by many people, it seems like there is an indication that these people were attempting to harness energy fields, utilizing conductive structures, macrochips, you know. And I think that if you look at, like you said, the engineering methods implemented, the construction methods, the construction materials, largely quartzile, conductive material like
yeah.
metallic alloys, sometimes gold, you know, you're looking at something that I think could generate a massive amount of potential energy that could be somehow exported for whatever purpose. And that might be different depending on where you're going. Look at, as some people consider, like that giant obelisks might have been certain placements upon nodes, which could interface with a field of energy. And I think that these are all plausible things that we're doing now.
Sure.
So if you look at how it might have been understood in a different way then, it might lend us an opportunity to perceive ideas that may never have really been enacted upon up until more recent times. And I think that really kind of changes how we can see what was going on with these, rather than them all being burial mounds or tombs or things that otherwise seen later on.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we've gotten into with Stephen Myers every single time he's been on, is that you can hold the concept that the Great Pyramid of Giza was a tomb all day long. However, by any concept of Egyptology and their understanding of their religion. Without sacred inscriptions from the Egyptian Book of the Dead on the wall of the tomb, whoever was buried in there was doomed for all eternity to stay in there. They weren't going anywhere. So why is it that the, quote, king's chamber, where the sarcophagus is devoid of any inscription? Like, right. When the soul came out of whatever body was supposedly in there, he's just trapped, yo. He ain't going anywhere. Like, there is no sacred inscription there for him to tell Thoth. And, like, yeah. It's not going to happen. You're not going anywhere. So it really was like, quote, the mummy situation, where it was like, but what was going on there? Or was it the fact that the monument was actively built of something else? And whenever you start talking about the materials, things like, especially whenever you're looking at a lot of the older temples like Göbekli Tepe, stuff like that, that are made out of stones like diorite, that kind of stuff. It's a high crystalline content. And especially whenever you're looking at ancient Egypt and obelisks, like you were talking about, those were typically made out of solid granite, and granite in and of itself is basically a capacitor waiting to happen. You've got a bunch of quartz, which we know will carry an electric charge. Like there's IBM studies that show that quartz crystal will store data, carry electric charge. I mean, we regularly use piezo. You use them all the time in your electronic drum kit, using piezo sensors. It's just a wafer of quartz that whenever it's impacted creates an electric charge. That's quartz. It's a piezoelectric crystal. In addition to that, you got carbon, which is a resistor, and you've also got feldspar, which is a layered form of quartz, which can act like a capacitor. So, like, you've got an electric circuit just inside of a chunk of granite waiting to happen.
It's something that, you know, a lot of people don't even realize, but I think that there is a strange connection there with how we ended up being able to utilize and engineer things on a micro scale, mm-hmm. rather, whereas it looks like they were able to do so on a macro scale, which maybe they couldn't do micro things. Maybe they did. I mean, we're not finding like old iPhone, iPhones, yeah, like, exactly, you know, underground or anything.
Well, look sometimes, at this transistor. You know,
like weird, some weird things, like the Antikythera mechanism, things like mm-hmm. that. But on a, you know, more casual basis, we find enormous monuments everywhere. Yeah. We're not finding small little microchips, at least in the sense that we think we are. But now, there, you know, we have landfills littered with, you know, old computers, all of
it. Yep.
So it makes you wonder.
When our parents were kids, they had ENIAC.
Today, and they weren't able to maybe produce the things like we have then. And so it's an interesting transference there that, you know, I think that we've lost an idea about how the relationship we have with natural electromagnetism, the field. And that's what I was saying, is that I think that some of these ancient people, us, you know, we somehow had a form of awareness about the nature of our world, whatever it is, in a way that their engineering was geared toward that understanding. And that to me is really interesting, because maybe they realized that we are living within this system of operation that utilizes these energy fields, these vibratory states, and did a lot that I think has completely been lost. And we are somehow, through our connection and memory and understanding, or other way of accessing, some people ascribe to all kinds of different modes of making contact with this information, and that gets a little bit you know, lofty as well and speculative. But I do think that there is something to how what we can see in our ancient past is completely misconstrued. I think that there's a lot to show that we're still sort of picking up pieces of that strange puzzle to make sense of. And yeah, somehow we forgot.
Well, and it's a while back, probably just before we had you on, we had Gray Scott, a futurist, on, and he was talking about a study that showed that most people only remember fine detail up to 8 years. That's it. After 8 years, it becomes gross detail. And, you know, it goes from macro to micro to macro in your own mind. And you want to know, like, why political parties, you know, every eight or 10 years, like, it's like, wait a minute, weren't they touting something else 8 years ago?
Yeah.
Things like that. Like, yeah, it's there to keep you off kilter, folks. And even now, whenever you look at science, whenever you look at things, just to harken back to the beginning of our conversation with Bigfoot, to bring it all home, you have to be willing to accept a possibility. You have to be willing to put yourself aside and put what you know aside, at least what you know to be true. And you have to be vulnerable enough to let your paradigm be utterly destroyed. And on a daily basis, like, you gotta be okay with that. You have to be, and that's part of the reason why the new name for the show is Curious Realm. Cause the same way that I used to teach the kids that I taught every week, the day you stop asking questions, you should be dead. Should be dead the day you stop asking questions. You should be asking questions about your reality and your place in it until the day you die. And unfortunately,
there's always something to be learned at any stage.
Yeah, that's not our society. That's not the society that we live in. And one of the things that people in the group bring up all the time whenever I post things about Bigfoot, things like that, is like, oh, you know, if they were around, we'd have found them by now. I'm about to bring up a picture on screen, everybody, that I quote every single time somebody says that. I tell them to go to the Earth Observatory from NASA.gov and feel free to take a look at the United States at night. Just Google it. Google it. This picture's from 2012, but I guarantee you it ain't changed that much, folks. Half of the United States is dark. That means no civilization, no streetlights, no people. So when you're talking about a landmass the size of the United States, and we're saying there's no possible way, dude, there's half of it that you ain't even been to, Jack. You passed through it, maybe, but you ain't, like, staying a good clip there. You know what I mean? So even the concept of that to me is like, you're the crazy person, not me. I refuse to believe that hundreds of years of indigenous people's stories about the same thing from the East Coast to the West Coast to the North Coast to the South Coast are wrong.
Not only that, you know, there's something that you mentioned, people I've heard say who don't have anything to do with Bigfoot, and they'll say, I knew what I saw, and I knew what I saw couldn't exist, and it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
And so I never said anything about it until whenever, you know, and I think that's an interesting idea that in people's minds, even though they witnessed something, they're already of the disposition that it can't be.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's in front of them.
Well, because it's the only way that they can reconcile it in their logic. You know, and even people like Terry Lovelace, his story took his entire life almost to come out, because if he'd come out earlier when he was like an attorney, attorney general for a state, things like that, working in a prosecutor's office, Man, imagine the cases that could have been tossed out. You know, if that's exactly what you come forward with, and that's what we need to realize. No different than the. And this is going to sound really harsh, folks, and believe me, I'll probably be putting a trigger warning in Curious Realm, but no different than the hashtag MeToo movement or anything else. And the fact that or Jeffrey Epstein or human trafficking or anything like that, that we bring light to on this show. No different. Those stories need to be told. And there are more people out there with those stories than you might think. And that's what we have to consider, is how many people out there have a story that they're too afraid to tell, Daniel. How many of those people, and that's what changed the course of this show, was having guests like Dr. John Hall on with targeted individuals, and us having some beers and stuff and a great conversation. And then the next day, me getting an email from a targeted individual in Israel that was like, thank you so much for giving credence to this topic, for talking about it. Nobody wants to believe us. Nobody wants to think that this is happening. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you know, I think that it really does help when there's a platform of support and a supportive network there for people to feel okay with coming forward, because it, with any of these things, or so much of these things anyway, the only reason we know about it is because witnesses, experiencers, individuals with some thing that may have happened to them or that they feel is taking place are coming forward about it. And without that, we don't really have a lot or much at all to go by. And it's because of their bravery and their courageousness to do so. And like you mentioned, Terry Lovelace, a buddy of mine, and many others who either had some kind of anomalous encounter, whether it falls more into the alien or Bigfoot or whatever ghost, you know, spirit, whether it's interpreted as a religious experience, whatever, that these people are experiencing something that they don't understand, and that society has ridiculed them to the point that it's hard for anyone to come forward. So I'm appreciative of all the people that have, and those who I've been able to talk to. And I know you as well, Christopher, you're doing a great job with a show like this to provide a platform for awareness, really. And that gets really the momentum going for people to be able to come out of the woodwork, to be able to feel comfortable in sharing their story. And I think that's a big part of how we find out more. It can be also a little bit more challenging, because then there's a lot more to sift through and to make sense of. But it does give people reassurance that maybe they're not crazy. And I've had people ask that all the time. Am I crazy because of this? And I think, you know, it's too bad that that is what
that's the default
pushed upon them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the default mentality, is crazy. And that's just it. I mean, no different than any scientist running out of a lab with a torn piece of printer paper going, "Eureka." Okay, crazy man. Eureka what? You know, like, no different. The point is, we have lost an empathy in our society where we are more concerned about why somebody believes something and just being interested in that and leaving it at that. We're less interested in that and more interested in convincing them of our paradigm and how it's right. Which is not how you foster conversation. That's not how you foster growth. That's not how you lead an empathetic society in the charge for humanity. It's just not. I don't care how, quote, woke you are or whatever. That's not how it works. And unfortunately, I think there's probably about 25% of us. And I say that number because that's quite literally, it was less than 25% of the United States that took part in the American Revolution. The rest of them were pointing and going, crazy person, stop.
Yeah.
But there were less than 25% that were like, no, man. And when you think about that, that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
Well, it's,
is 20,
it's reaching
20%.
That critical mass, yeah. You know? And yeah. I think that the same case can be made with a lot of these issues about, you know, I think a combination of things. And it's not necessarily that it's really about changing people's minds to get them to believe something different or new. It's about, to me, anyways, when it comes to like exploring these strange issues and mysterious subjects, the unexplained in general, attempting to do what we can, I think, as a critical thinking working body of individuals who are making an effort to investigate or research any of these types of phenomena, to present something that's tangible enough to the lowest common denominator, which is the basic population that is indifferent to all of this. They're not biased either way, or you aren't exposing something that they already have an idea about, more so than, you know, just maybe if having heard about it. But I think that the greatest thing we can do is continue to scrutinize it scientifically in a way that does show that if there's something there, if there's something we can discern and make sense of, then we need to go for it and accept what we can find, regardless of whether it fits our idea of what we want. And I think that a lot of people get worried about that, that, you know, if in the event that, let's say, there is nothing to the Bigfoot phenomenon and it is just a projection of the mind or something, I don't necessarily know that that's the case. But in the event that if that was what it really is, a lot of people would be disappointed. They'd say, you know, I was really hoping to meet him, you know, someday or something, you know, so it can be disappointing whenever reality doesn't match your envisioning of it. And I think that that's also a sobering notion, because we have to go with that. Otherwise, we live in disillusionment, and how closely the lines blur between the strange reality that we live in and then also disillusionment, you know?
Yeah. And
how easy it is to fall into that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We have to be willing to have that conversation. We have to be willing to do something about it. And the thing that pops into my mind all the time, I'm 46. I'm not going to lie. I'm a raging Simpsons fan. I love the Simpsons. But the thing that always crosses my mind is the Treehouse of Horrors, where the dolphins come and take over the Earth. And they... they're like, oh no, you guys have just been doing it wrong forever. And imagine that day. Imagine the day that nature just goes, all right, man, enough. Because it won't be the first time, and guaranteed it won't be the last. It's not the first time that we've been here. It's definitely not the first time that human civilization has been here. Or existed, like we were saying earlier, in a larger aspect, been knocked down like 18 pegs and then had to walk back up the ladder. It's not the first time. So to think so, I posit the fact that you're the crazy person if you think that that's not the fact. that's just me.
You know, there's a concept called continuity of government, COG. And I think that this can play out in a lot of ways, but even in the most practical way, I think it's been well thought out, played out, or planned out. However, in the event that such, you know, a massive situation were to occur again, that there are protocols in place to, enable a continuity of government in whatever form that is, whether it's, you know, thinking about humanity itself, or how something like that can be preserved in the succession of a mass die-off event or something to that effect, you know. And I think there are things that have been considered in official but maybe unacknowledged capacities, known, you know, by very few, about any certain things that you can see might take place in the event that a huge cataclysmic event or something were to take place like that. And of course, some people say we're long overdue for something, but then again, you know, I don't think it should make people feel unsafe or to like instill a sense of fear necessarily, but to show that, you know, there are these cycles that the world and humanity has gone through, and that we have to understand more about how that has happened before, maybe to get an idea about what to expect and what we can do now, if there is anything really effective that we could do.
Yeah. And hey, you know, I was just scrolling through the CBS News article from 2011 talking about the good Miss Othman, who was a Malaysian UN ambassador that was appointed as the first extraterrestrial communicator. Like, she became the official representative for the UN, where it's like, if we're contacted from somebody from outside, you're the one that's going to be talking to them.
What a job.
So, yeah, like that exists. Quote, the continued search for extraterrestrial communication sustains the hope that someday humankind will receive signals from extraterrestrials. When we do, we should have in place a coordinated response that takes into account all the sensitivities related to the subject. The UN is a ready-made mechanism for such a coordination. And if you think it's a coinkydink that, you know, their emblem looks oddly like the Starfleet emblem.
Right.
All you got to do is, you know, throw a Space Force emblem on top of it and you're done. So, Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time tonight, man. And especially on such short notice. I know I contacted you like just a few days ago to be like, hey, what are you doing? Man, we gotta do this more frequently. We really do. I know we said that last time. It's been such a great conversation. I love the things that you post over, at your Vortex page. And of course, you're one of the many video channels that we carry on our video pages on Dudes and Beer and Curious Realm. So, before we let you go, shameless self-promotion time, man. What do you have coming up? What do you have coming out for release? What events are you going to be appearing at, man?
Cool. Yeah, I really appreciate that, Christopher, and all the great work you've done. I can just be found on Facebook and Instagram are like my main social media things. Of course, my YouTube channel, The Vortex, has its own set of pages also. And I have those groups on Facebook you mentioned. They're a great way to just find out about some new discoveries and fun things that are interesting to me and a lot of probably the people you've got on your group as well. So we like to cross promote, cross share things. And it's a cool kind of opportunity to get connected with other like-minded people too. I have a few things going on. Like we mentioned at the beginning, this weekend is going to be the Texas Bigfoot Conference. And that's actually going to be available for live stream for those who can't attend in person. Nice. So check that out. There's also a cool event next month. I'm going to be a speaker at called the Star Wars Conference, and that's going to feature a lot of interesting speakers, including Jacques Vallée and Paul Hynek, son of the late J. Allen Hynek.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be a pretty cool function that I'm involved in. I'm going to be presenting some new material. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm working on and it's really an ethnology series of compiled work that I've done over my, you know, decade-long endeavor into researching these things, talking with people, interviewing witnesses, researching information and sites and things. So I'm hoping to get most of that published here pretty soon.
Nice.
And I'm excited to kind of get that done. And then next year, of course, there's more going on. I'm going to have a book on the Aurora UFO incident out for the 120th anniversary next year that I'm also working on kind of on the side. There's so much. I have all these videos I'm going through right now to edit and publish, which those can be found on the YouTube channel, but there's a lot. I'm doing what I can to keep up with everything. It's been a whirlwind lately. And of course I don't mind that it's been awesome again to be on the show, and we'll have to do it again for sure. So I appreciate
most
it.
Definitely.
It's been great.
Well, please do hold the line while we close things out. Once again, everybody, make sure to stop on by and subscribe to, The Vortex channel on YouTube. Make sure to stop on by and check that out. Make sure to stop on by. What is the website again?
I'm going through and doing some reconstruction, but it's thevortex.online.
There you go. There you go. So make sure to stop on by and check that out. Still some great info there, despite any updates being done. Daniel, please do hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking everything out from Daniel Allen Jones and the Vortex, as well as Russell Dowden and Texas Hemp Reporter, make sure to obey our call to action. Obey. You have no choice. Google the Curious Realm. We have already taken over the front page of Google just in the last month and a half. We have 7 episodes left, people, before we launch Curious Realm. I literally wrote the intro music all of a few days ago. So can't wait. Till next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. And remember, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.